welcome this week to Double Line's episode of Double Line Monday Morning Minutes. My name is Samuel Lau, and I'm here with my co-host, Mark Kimbrough.
Hey.
All right, that's the abbreviated salutation there from Mr. Kimbrough, but I'll take it. It's just after the close on March 22nd, 2024. I believe we are now 4 days officially into the start of spring here, which began on March 19th. So on the fourth day of spring here, I'm certainly feeling it, Mark. I don't know about you, but I've got some pretty strong seasonal allergies here as we just crossed the, I believe it's the vernal equinox is the official, one of the official terms there.
Yeah, I've been noticing that fine layer of yellow dust on my car.
Yeah, you got to love it and the way it makes you feel. But let's see here. Let's get started. I'm going to change things around a little bit here today, rather than what we usually do when we talk about some of the, you know, some of the media appearances and other things that you know, listeners can check out on our other sites here. But getting through some housekeeping here on our Double Line YouTube channel, you can see most recently Jeffrey Gundlach and Ken Shinoda's. They're both of their FOMC reactions. Both up on that channel there. Jeffrey was speaking with Jennifer Ablon, and Ken Shinoda was on the Bloomberg TV there. And then also we have a new Between the Lines blog post that we have on the LinkedIn.com account that we have through Double Line. And there this week they're talking about the number of record weeks that we the inversion that we've seen between the 10 and the 2 year treasury there. And you can find that again on LinkedIn.com. Without having to have a subscription or even an account. But of course, we prefer you to have a subscription there so you could be notified of that as well as all the other news that we post on that site. And then finally, Mr. Jason Ferrent here is wanting me to prompt all of our listeners, especially in Mr. Mayberry's absence that there is a final match. And I'm guessing this is for soccer for between the U.S. USA and Mexico. That's coming up on the Sunday night. So stay tuned and check that out if you're interested there. But without further ado, now that the housekeeping's out of the way, I'll jump right into the market section here with a look at the S&P 500, which had a very strong week-to-day performance, up 2.3% so far or through the close this week. Year-to-date, it is up over 10%, and a pretty strong showing across all of the sectors minus one had a positive print in front of it. The one lonely negative returner on the week to date was real estate, down 40 basis points. That is also the only sector of the S&P 500 that is down on a year to date basis as well. That's down just under 3 percentage points there for the year to date in the real estate sector. In terms going back to the week to date, I'm looking here. We had four sectors that were above a 2% return for the week. And one here within those four was comm services. That was up 3.6%. That's followed by industrials and consumer discretionary, both up 2.9%. And then finally, we had technology sector up 2.25%. So a very strong showing there pretty much across all the sectors there for the S&P 500. So seeing a little bit more breadth, at least when it comes in terms of the sector performance that we hadn't seen for much of 2023. So that's nice to see a little bit more well-balanced type of returns across at least the sectors there. Moving over to fixed income land, starting with treasuries. Treasuries on the pretty much across the board look like they rallied here. The two-year treasury note ended the week at a yield of 4.6%. That is 13 basis points lower in terms of the yield down relative to the previous close. And on the 10-year treasury note, that ended the week at a yield of 4.21%, 10 basis points lower in yield versus last Friday. And then for the bond, the 30-year treasury bond closing the week at 4.39% yield. That yield is 4 basis points lower than the prior week. And this is something that, you know, we've been talking here about the on the Monday Morning Minutes. You're kind of seeing still that parallel shift down in or higher in yields since where we started the year, up pretty much around 34 basis points across the curve, across those 3 points of the curve, I should say. So given the rally that we had in rates this week, with that for the broad bond index, the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate was up 75 basis points, still keeping it in negative territory on a year-to-date basis, though. That's down 90 basis points for the year-to-date. And then looking across, kind of a similar story for the week, strong showing across each one of the sector cohorts that we cover here on Double Line Minutes, with the exception of one. Bank loans did have a negative sign in front of it, down 10 basis points on the week-to-date. And then the rest was positive, but leading the charge by over double the return on the week-to-date basis. Then the rest of the sectors there was emerging markets, sovereign debt index, that was up 1.7%. And then we had high yield corporate credit, investment grade corporate credit, as well as agency mortgage-backed securities, all up about 80 basis points for the week-to-date. And then we had treasuries up 70 basis points. But looking at it from the year-to-date window, the traditional sectors of the bond market, those that are within the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate, those were all down about 1% or so on a year-to-date basis. Those are the only negative performers on the year-to-date thus far. Both the two areas of below investment grade credit in the high yield space, as well as bank loans, those are both up about 1.4% year-to-date. And then finally, FEM also up on a year-to-date basis by about 1.5% there. Now, moving over to the commodity market. Commodities ended the week lower, down 40 basis points for the week, and still managing to hold on to this positive print, a little bit lower though, but it's now it's at 1.3% positive return on the year-to-date basis. Taking a look at WTI front month futures for the crude comp, or looking at crude oil there, that's maintaining the $80 handle with a closing price of $80.82 for a barrel of crude oil. That's down still 25 basis points though for the week-to-date basis, but still up on that front month price, up just about 13% for the year-to-date. And with that roundup of the markets, Mark, do you want to kick us off on what happened in macro land?
All right. So it was called a light week of economic data, but it was not a slow week. We're going to start with Wednesday. We had the FOMC rate decision. The Fed left the rate unchanged at 5.5, so the band of 5.25 to 5.5. And they released an update to their summary of economic projections. But we're going to come back to all of that later. We're going to table the Fed for now. On Thursday, so week's almost over yesterday, we had initial and continuing claims for the weeks ending March 16th and 9th, respectively. The four-week moving average of initial claims has been bounds on the low side of 200K and the high side of 220K since September of last year. And we came in pretty much right in the middle there at 211K this week. Similar story for continuing claims. I'm going to use September as this benchmark. But since September, the average print for the four-week moving average of continuing claims has been 1.801 million. And after this most recent print this week, the average is at 1.802 million. So steady as she drifts. On Thursday, we got prelim S&P Global US PMI data for March. For that, we have manufacturing PMI. It printed at 52.5, that beat estimates modestly and increased month over month. But this was the highest print we've seen since June 2022, back when it printed at 52. Spot seven. And then the last ramble of numbers here, it makes it for the third consecutive month above 50. So S&P Global, their manufacturing index has started to emerge from the slowdown. Still waiting to see that happen to be corroborated by the ISM manufacturing PMIs. That's, I think, since mid-22. Has it been since the end of 2022 was the last time we were at 50 or above. going through this, so we also have services PMI that declined to a three-month low at 51.7. That's still riding a 14-month streak above 50, so expansion continues there. Briefly digging into some of the details in this report, there's some interesting topics they had. They had manufacturing production that was noticed to be growing at the fastest rate since May of 2022. Again, the S&P Global has been showing some signs of thawing for the manufacturing world. We also have services seeing a softening in new business growth. Still growing positively, but it's softening. And there was some commentary about pricing pressures restricting downstream customer demand. but all in all, both are still in expansion territory. Also saw business confidence rising to the highest level in nearly 2 years. And that's covering both services and manufacturing. And then finally, there's some talk of cost inflation being on the rise. You have labor costs for service providers and rising energy costs for manufacturers, and they are passing along those prices, those higher costs onto their consumers. So we'll hopefully see a little corroboration from ISM later on. On Thursday, we also had the LEI release for February. That came in with the first positive month-over-month prints at 0.1% since February 2022. And that brought the year-over-year measure up to a negative 6.3% versus a prior of negative 7.0. But last time I was on this, I highlighted a quote. It was actually when LEI was released last time. And I'm going to repeat that quote. While the declining LEI continues to signal headwinds to economic activity, for the first time in the past 2 years, six out of its 10 components were positive contributors over the past six-month period. And that's the six-month period ending in January. As a result, the leading index currently does not signal recession ahead. While no longer forecasting a recession in 2024, we do expect real GDP growth to slow to near zero over Q2 and Q3. Now, this was interesting last time because they came up with this. I seeing LEI at negative 7% last month, thinking that's still suggesting recession, but they came out with this quote about how six of the 10 components over a six-month period all were positive contributors, so no recession anymore. But we got updates this month, and only 3 out of 10 components are positive contributors over a six-month period. But there was no update on this recession language. They're not saying GDP will be near zero. They're just saying it's going to be low. So it was just an interesting observation from the report that we're continuing to learn how they're going to try and interpret that. And that covers the week for economic data.
Again, I do remember last time about the LEI index that I believe it was Mayberry and I were on the podcast for that week, and we were talking about some of the notes that you brought up about the kind of that. I think one of us made the comment that it seemed like a knee-jerk reaction by the conference board to come out and talk about it from that perspective in terms of the fact that it might no longer be indicative of a recession based on the number of positive contributors were just being, 60% of them. And, just wondering how long that would last. So I guess we have our answer kind of here in the sense that there's not a little bit of a whipsaw reversal, but we'll see if they continue to be steady on that prognostication there relative to their index. But it's always interesting to see how, it's kind of reflective too of investing, right? Sometimes, you have conviction in a certain idea, and when the data starts to kind of fray around your thesis there, the behavioral mechanism comes in, and whether or not you want to kind of make decision changes after that is kind of a reflection of the person's personality as well. So you're kind of seeing it within this conference board measure here as well in terms of the people who are putting it together.
Yeah, it seems fair and healthy to revisit given the results. So
always. So with that, we'll jump into the topic of the week, which is the FOMC. Given that it is a March meeting on the quarterly meetings, the FOMC also releases alongside their rate and monetary policy decisions. They also released the summary of economic projections, which is always interesting to get some insight in terms of how some of the both the voting members as well as just the members that are non-voters may be seeing the longer run economy and other parts of the Fed funds projection as well. But here we are for the meeting that took place on March 20th with regards to the Federal Reserve target rate. That remained unchanged between the levels of 5.25% on the lower bound and 5.5% on the upper bound. The interest on reserves that they pay is also remained unchanged as a result at 5.4. Also unchanged was the overnight reverse repo rate at a rate of 5.3%, as well as the amount that would be available per counterparty that stayed the same as well at $160 billion. And then finally, with regards to the pace of the quantitative tightening program, that also remained unchanged at $60 billion cap for U.S. Treasuries and $35 billion for agency mortgage-backed securities with regards to the roll-off. And as of right, since the start of the quantitative tightening program, they are now have reduced the size of the balance sheet overall by about $1.5 trillion. And a lot of times, when we talk about some of these lesser-known rates out there, so it's always helpful perhaps some of the listeners get a little bit refresher, but we have on Double Nine Minutes done some pretty deep dives on what some of these rates are and why they're important. But if for those who are interested in the interest on reserves and perhaps why it's no longer called interest on excess reserves as it had been billed when it first came out, you can check out episode 21 on your favorite podcast platform or on our website at doubleline.com under the Minutes podcast series there. But that was recorded back in June 25th of 2021. And then also we had two episodes on the overnight reverse repo rate. The first one that really builds the foundation was in episode 18, recorded on June 4th, 2021. And then we had a follow-up episode based on some listener questions for the topic of the week. We did a similar type of episode where we went a little bit more in depth with reverse repo and what it meant for the current markets and financial system. That was for episode 112, recorded on April 21st, 2023. And then finally, we had an episode that we took a deep dive in the mechanics behind and as well as the implications of quantitative tightening. That was in episode 58, March 25th, 2022 was the recording date. But well, without further ado, hopefully, some of those tools there will be helpful in when we start talking about some of the FOMC press statements there, it might be helpful for listeners to think about it. But with regards to the summary of economic projections here, as a reminder, effectively what it does is it pulls there's 19 members that are polled within each one of these quarterly updates here on the projections, but it talks about what they see as their estimate over the changes in real GDP, for the upcoming years, with 2024 being an upgrade relative to their December projections. So they actually moved up their expectation for real GDP in 2024 up to a rate of 2.1% annualized. This is up from 1.4% the period before. So they've definitely upgraded their thinking about how the economic activity in the U.S. will progress over the calendar year of 2024. So that was interesting to see. And I guess you could also say they upgraded in terms of their thinking of the U.S. labor market based on the unemployment rate, the headline unemployment rate. In December, it was forecasted to the median rate was 4.1%, and it was upgraded by moving it lower down to a 4.0%. So stronger economy, stronger labor force. But then what was interesting at the same time is that they also increased the projection for the median rate of PCE, core PCE, that is, up from 2.4% in December up to 2.6%. For the calendar year of 2024. So when I take a look at all of those upgrades there, one might think that based on the strength of the economy, the strength of the labor force, and the fact that inflation rate would be moving higher relative to their December projections there, that perhaps there would be a little bit of a change in the way that they're thinking about rate cuts for the calendar year of 2024. But that remained unchanged for the fullness of 2024. They're still looking at an aggregate of 75 basis points and lower federal funds rate, which the market tends to think of in just quarter point increments. So three cuts for 2024. So it was interesting to see that didn't get changed over relative to the projections that were indicated in December of last year for the year of calendar year of 2024. But what was interesting to me was that for the projection for the federal funds rate level in the years of 2025 and 2026, those were increased versus where they were in December when they took that last summary of economic projections. So for 2025, they're now forecasting a median rate of 3.9 up basically a quarter point increment from a rate of 3.6, given the round there. And then similar to that in the calendar year of 2026, which albeit is pretty far reaching, but it is interesting to show that shift in sentiment. But that was also a higher rate projected for 2026, where now it stands at a rate of 3.1% relative to back in December. They had forecasted it to be 2.9%. So As some people say, that I can't, it's hard to square that circle. That's kind of what I read when I was looking through the summary of economic projections. But curious to see what you thought about the overall press conference, given I was on the road, so I didn't get a chance to listen in, or even more importantly, sometimes to see Powell's physical reactions to some of these questions or, in his reading of his prepared remarks. I'm just interested to see what you thought of the overall press conference there.
It's interesting to compare the press conference to the numbers that you just cited, because those sound effectively hawkish to me, and yet the response was rather dovish, with rallies going on, with increased probabilities of the June rate cut happening, and increased probability or more cuts being priced in for December. The probability priced in for December. But you know what? It's a lot of it was also more of the same. I mean, let's start actually with the release statement that they put out. And but I read the second sentence from the FOMC's formal release statement, and that says job gains have moderated since early last year but remain strong. They since have just changed that have moderated since early last year but remain to just remain strong, which I'd say is a strengthening of that language, which would feed into what you're seeing with that change in unemployment rate. But the rest of what was in there is just reinforcing the Fed's commitment to 2% maximum employment, their goals. But when it came to prepared remarks, when Powell started speaking to the audience, there was, well, I'll mention a couple angles here. Powell spoke to considerable progress the economy has made towards achieving the dual mandate versus last time we had the press conference for January, he spoke to good progress. So we're going to weigh considerable progress versus good progress. It sounds like I'm going to take that as dovish. We're getting closer to what the Fed's goal would be that would allow them to lower rates. Instead of saying that the labor market remains tight, he says it remains relatively tight. It's softening language there. And then also, Powell brought up the balance sheet, as you said. We've got $1.5 trillion in progress. While there's been talks about the balance sheet coming from numerous members of the Fed, he mentioned it specifically in his prepared remarks and said that they spoke about it in this meeting and about this, they discussed slowing the pace of QT. But while noticings were made, say, quote, it will be appropriate to slow the pace of runoff fairly soon. Those were the bigger takeaways I had in the prepared remarks. But getting into the Q&A section, it was funny. The first two questions, I'm going to say he almost gave non-answers to me. And he stressed the Fed's commitment to bring inflation down to 2%. I know that every now and then people have little chatters about, will the Fed succeed? Are we ever going to have to capitulate and kind of raise that target? He continues to be a stalwart standard holder of a standard bearer of the 2% inflation goal. They will reach it. There were some questions on housing inflation. I know that there's been expectations. I think this is a big reason that the concept of super core services inflation came out, stripping out housing. But he was asked about the stubborn progress that housing has been making on the CPI and PCE front. And Powell comments that he expects to see tamer rental inflation show up over time. He's just not certain on the timing, but it still is fully expected that those lower rates of rental inflation will start to show up. On recent strength, actually, this is one of the more entertaining angles here. On recent strength in the inflation metrics that we saw back in January, we had a bit of a pop with the inflation metrics. Powell says, I always try to be careful about dismissing data that we don't like. And that was a quote. But then right after, he speaks to there being possible seasonal effects in the January number, which is a totally reasonable, angle to approach it from. But he did say and try to take those January and February numbers in stride. They don't really change the overall story of inflation moving down to 2%. It's the fits and starts of inflation. There's going to be a little bit of a bumpy ride, but just like the Fed didn't get overly excited last year when we had that string of some very weak core PCE numbers, they're not getting a very concerned or overreacting to a couple higher prints. So we'll see how that continues to develop. And then last thing I'll mention. Mentioned potential cracks in the labor market. And when I say about them, he says, I don't, quote, I don't see those cracks today. And we follow all the possible stories that are out there about there being cracks. But the overall picture really is a strong labor market. The extreme imbalances that we saw in the early parts of the pandemic recovery have mostly been resolved. And it's end quote. I mean, that's looking at the numbers again, the SEP, and I get, a general hawkish sense, but it's possible the market just overran that and this became a dovish meeting. So that was the, I'd say, takeaways from the FOMC for me.
Yeah, for me, I guess I would add two things. While I didn't get to watch the entirety of it, I did, in order to try to save some time, I skimmed over the transcript, and I do remember that, the talk about the kind of downplaying the recent beats in inflation prints, where I believe it was at least the February data and somewhat the January data as well, but really in the February data that was released in March, it pretty much inflation measures, regardless of what you're looking at, either PPI or PCE or even prices paid through the various servicing or manufacturing sectors or the export and import data, those all beat expectations. And when he was asked about that, they said, there's, I think the question that I wrote down here was, has the recent numbers we've gotten for inflation data dented any of the confidence towards, a longer term trend of disinflation? His answer, it seemed to be, was it certainly hasn't improved our confidence. So that was pretty interesting to me, just to see that. I'm going to probably go back to the tape and look at it as well. But two other things that kind of stuck out was one regarding the cuts and the timing. And it seems like the market is for the most part coalesced around the idea that June will be the timing of the first cut in the amount of 25 basis points. And the question came around that June timing, and effectively, Powell did just push it off entirely, did some hand waving and just said everything is data dependent, meeting by meeting, and that no decisions were made about future meetings at that March 20th meeting. So pretty much, again, it's a similar tone as he stuck to his previous, and it really just seems like he stuck to the script this time. But it was interesting to me that how much the market has moved, from a three cut potentially out to seven cuts, or six to seven cuts potentially, and then now back to three. And the timing kind of coming around this June timing that the market's seen. But all in all, Powell is still kind of sticking to his message, something that he deviated away from back in December. But since, in January and again in March, he's come back to the same idea of just bringing it back into sticking to the script. And it seems to have worked well in terms of setting market expectations, but he neither pushed back on or supported the idea of this June timing overall. But he did just say it's going to be meeting by meeting. And then additionally, when it came to quantitative tightening, I guess around the idea of the timing of that, we're going to have his new ambiguous term that we always try to, as a market participants, try to overanalyze here. But along the lines of higher for longer, now he's talking about quantitative tightening. He used this term fairly soon is when it'll begin. I counted at least three times that he brought that up, but when someone had asked him about it, he responded by saying, "I wouldn't want to try to be more specific than that, but you get the idea," meaning you should know what fairly soon means. So ultimately, I think the market's going to fret about that term, and want to know what fairly soon means over time. So I guess we can prepare to kind of quibble over that timing of what fairly soon means.
That's that. There was some good research and some tongue-in-cheek kind of commentary about the fairly soon going around the street this week. It was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, when I get asked when I'm going to do something, I'm just going to start referring to it or replying as fairly soon, and see how far that gets me around my house.
It's
But with that,
transitory.
that's right. That's right. So, with that, it's overall, that's a thanks for the wrap up on that. That does give me some color and some of the things I missed. But hopefully our listeners found that helpful. But with that, do you want to kick us off on some of the things that we should be keeping an eye on for next week?
We have the shortened holiday week next week, with Friday being a holiday, Good Friday. But let's start off with Tuesday. We have the prelim durable goods orders numbers for February. It's estimated to rebound from a prior of negative 6.2% to positive 1.1. As a reminder, last month there was a 60% drop in aircraft orders. Everyone's familiar with all the stuff in the news, I'm sure. But that was the sharpest drop we've had in durable goods orders or aircraft orders since the shutdown in 2020. So it's understandable to see a bit of a rebound there. But the ex-transportation figure is estimated to come in at 0.4% month over month. This, unfortunately, has been negative, or unfortunately or fortunately, whatever you're trying to see, but it's been negative three of the past 4 months, but the year-over-year metric is still clinging to a positive 1.6. So still productive investment in the non-volatile ex-transportation category. Also on Tuesday, we get the S&P CoreLogic 20 city month over month home price appreciation figure for back in January. And that's a little stale, but we still like to look at this. It's expected to come in at 0.20%. Also looking back here, last year from April to October, this measure, this is a seasonally adjusted number, but from that April to October period, it averaged just shy of 80 bips of growth per month. And as of the last couple months, it's settled back down at a more reasonable, call it 20 bip handle. I think we've got 0.21 and 24% in the prior 2 months. So we'll see where home prices come in. Also on Tuesday, you have the Conference Board Consumer Confidence Survey for March. It's estimated to print at a 107.0, up from a prior of 106.7. looking at this report in general, and we this is something many of us look at, but it's consumer expectations for the future 6 months out. In general, it's been pessimistic for the last couple of years. And every time that six-month present period rolls around to the present, it ends up outperforming the pessimistic outlook. But, I mean, history suggests that eventually the present either catches up or down, depending on if you're exceeding or under expectations. Eventually, you catch up with expectations. It can take many years for that to happen, but that's, I mean, history suggests that eventually you're going to get where you think you're going. But just for a little context to that, since 2015, so we got the last 8 years and change, we've only seen 7 months where the present metric was actually below the expectations metric. And that was an on and off period in between April 2020 and 2021. So just something to keep in mind. It can go on longer than you think it will, but eventually history is going to be repeated there. It'll bear itself out. On Thursday, moving forward, we have a third estimate of Q4 GDP. No change expected, estimated to be 3.2%, just end of the year on a strong note. Also, you get, like we always look for, initial and continuing claims. Nothing really to mention for them, steady as she drifts on Thursday. And then Friday, we get the Fed's preferred inflation metric comes out on a holiday when the market's closed. So that's good timing, but not that big of a deal. PC at this point, everyone kind of, the estimates are generally quite accurate given the inputs of CPI, PPI, the various different inputs that go into the calculations report. So that's estimated to be on a month-over-month basis for February, the headline level, 0.4%. Just for mentioning, this is the high watermark of the past 12-month period, 0.4. We saw that in October and September last year. So any and all base effects that are going to end up working that year-over-year number down are not going to be as helpful going forward. Core PCE is estimated to print at 0.3%, and we have 0.4 rolling off. But you know, this month, neither year-over-year metric is expected to change. And this is rounding basis, but headline is expected to stay at 2.4%. Core PCE is expected to stay at 2.8% year-over-year. And then also on Friday, we get personal income and personal spending. Those are estimated to come out at 0.4% and 0.5% respectively. The 20-year average on these is 0.4%. So if you're meeting or exceeding that, call that a win. I'll say that's welcome. One reminder on the personal income report. Last month, we saw a 1.0% print, but almost half of that was attributed to a rise in personal transfer receipts due to COLA adjustments, cost of living adjustments. About a third was attributed to a spike in dividend income that was completely out of the ordinary. The other, you know, called 20 bips or so was due to organic normal growth that you would see in the income print. So it was actually kind of a weak print absent those large anomalous spikes. But again, this month we're getting a little bounce back, I'd say, if I stripped out those one-time events. And, you know, we're getting 0.4 and 0.5. I'd say those are still pretty healthy numbers for our personal income and spending. And that's all I got for what to keep an eye out for on the holiday week.
All right, we'll see if some of your back of the envelope calculations come out to fruition. You did remind me too. It is a holiday next Friday. I completely forgot about that. So for our listeners here, we won't be recording Double Line Minutes next Friday, but instead we'll have a rather brief episode the Thursday before the holiday. So if you're listening here on the Spaces, be sure to look out for the announcement on the X. And tune into that, but also just the idea. I mean, you point out something that's pretty interesting: the fact that PCE, you know, the Fed's preferred measure coming out on the Friday. Hopefully, there's not a significantly material departure from expectations, either as a surprise or disappointment, you know, from the expectations there. Otherwise, you're going to see a lot of pent up market angst over the weekend
Yeah.
because people can't wait to get to their desk maybe on Monday, or hopefully they have something better to base their investment decisions on than that. But it'll be interesting. But wanted to thank everyone for tuning in. That pretty much wraps it up for us this week.
Yes, thank you to all our listeners out there today on Double Line Money Morning Minutes. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can pick up the latest episode each Friday after the bell. Minutes is available on all your favorite podcast providers. Hit us up on Twitter at DLineMinutes and send us your questions, or send us an email at minutes@doubleline.com with any questions, comments, or suggestions.
Yeah, and if you're interested in finding out more about us too, you can look at us up at our website of doubleline.com. I mentioned a couple of videos that have posted this week on our YouTube channel of youtube.com/doubleline capital. Don't forget, you can follow me and Jeff on Sherman Show Pod. Maybe we'll have an updated episode of the Sherman Show at some point in the near future. But I did want to thank everyone for tuning in this week, and I hope everyone has a great weekend.
This presentation was recorded on the date indicated. Views and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the views of Double Line Capital LP, its affiliates, or employees, should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities, and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. The presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media, in any form, without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this material. Liability, including any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is explicitly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The receipt of this presentation by any listener should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual, nor does it imply that such person becomes a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but it does not imply low risk. Copyright 2023, DoubleLine Capital.